Hello, and welcome to the Consulting Specifying Engineer podcast. I'm your host, Amara Rozgus, and in this episode, we are talking about workforce development in the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire protection engineering fields. I don't think we talk about career development enough, so I'm excited to speak with Spencer Perry. Hey, Spencer, how are you today?
Hi, Amara. Good. Happy to be on the podcast and excited to dig into this topic a little bit.
Right. And this is an ongoing conversation, so I think we could talk about this several times. Today, we're just going to touch on a few points. Here is some background about my guest before we kick things off. Spencer Perry is a technical delivery manager and senior vice president at CDM Smith, where he provides technical and leadership oversight for engineering and management staff. With 27 years of experience, he leads teams of engineers, delivering design and construction services for environmental, industrial, institutional, commercial, and federal projects, while mentoring junior engineers and promoting engineering careers. Again, a lot to talk about. So let's start at the top. When people talk about an experience gap in mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire protection, what does that mean in practical terms?
Yeah, when we talk about the experience gap in engineering, we're talking about the shortage of engineers who are in the middle and senior or advanced stages of their careers, right? The engineers who've seen a bunch of projects, they've made a bunch of mistakes, they've been in the field, they've seen challenges, and they've developed this engineering judgment, this strong engineering judgment. It's funny, 'cause it's not a knowledge gap. It's not that the and it's not even a lack of engineers. We have plenty of engineers graduating, and the engineering graduates we're seeing today, they're as smart as I've ever seen. They're graduating, they're tech savvy, they're theoretically capable, they're excellent graduates. It's not a knowledge gap. It's a gap in judgment, in experience, and in wisdom. And so, the difference between knowledge and wisdom is, my friend Bart says, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad, right? And so what takes years to develop to build that experience, that wisdom is recognizing risks before they become problems. Understanding constructability issues, knowing how things work, and being able to make good decision. So th there's no substitute for it, unfortunately. There's no substitute for that experience and no shortcut for it. And so how'd we get here, or what, why is there a gap? Well, there's a gap because we have some retiring engineers, right? We have an aging workforce of engineers who have all the experience that we want. They're retiring. Right now there's fewer students going into engineering, which is interesting. I think the studies say that the it peaked about 2019. So there's fewer and fewer folks going into the field. And then there's this phenomenon, there's this weird thing that happens in a mid-career. And this is about 5 years or so, when engineers are starting to think about long-term, career path. They've gotten some experience. They know what the field is. And something happens around here that one of two things happens, in my opinion. They will take a non-technical engineering career track, right? So they'll say, they'll want to be a project manager, maybe, or a people manager, or get into sales or something like that. So they're still in the engineering field, but they're not gaining the experience, and they're not able to deliver technically like we want. And then the other thing that happens around that time is that they just decide that they don't want to be engineers anymore. So they get out of the field. Maybe they'll burn out, or they'll go decide to do something else. And so, and we've always had that. That always happens when we start with the juniors. By the time they get to the mid-career, they will just we know there's going to be a reduction in that workforce because of those two things. So we got this growing shortage of experienced engineers, And the what's happening is that the demand for those experienced engineers is growing faster than we can develop them. And so that creates the gap.
And I love this analogy. Can technology help bridge the experience gap, or does it risk creating over-reliance on the tools without enough engineering judgment? Or, that background that you're talking about is vital.
And the answer is yes. Technology can help us, and yes, technology, can create, it can create problems, over reliance, like you said. But look, we have some of the best engineering tools we have than we've ever had right now, and we have more access to information. We have the tools and the tech to make engineers more effective and to help younger engineers kind of speed up that learning curve. But technology won't it can't replace experience. What we don't want to do is start treating, technology, what technology output, as engineering judgment. So, it can do a lot of things for us, but what it can't do is, understand the priorities of the project, or recognize when a result doesn't make sense, or anticipate construction challenges. There's still that need for experience. The software gives you the answer. Experience will tell you if it's the right answer, and unfortunately, there's no shortcut. A pretty good book, Outliers. Malcolm Gladwell, and in the book he comes up with this 10,000 hour rule, and he was dealing more with athletes, but the reality, what he said is that it takes 10,000 hours of practice or an experience to become an expert in your field, to become world class. And there's I mean there's that's about 5 years of experience. There's no magic to that number, but there is a reality that that experience and expertise building that it takes time. And engineering, you can learn the code, you can learn the tools pretty quickly, but developing that judgment and figuring out, understanding failures, making good decisions, that takes the time.
Okay, and then within that 10,000 hours, how important is site experience for young engineers that might be visiting a job site, seeing how systems are installed or operations? I mean, I've been asking this question for quite a while. How much do they get, and how important is it?
Oh, it's important. Yeah, it's important. And colleges don't provide that practical level of training, that practical knowledge. So more and more, we're seeing more and more graduates coming with internship experience, which is awesome. We love to see that. But the reality is that the site experience is important, because that's where that theory that they learned in college meets reality. It meets what we, what's in the field. And you can do a lot of stuff in an office, but you don't really understand constructability issues and operations, maintenance, until you see it coming out of the ground. We do something interesting, with the new graduates and interns that we get. And we have a senior engineer, Cindy, and she'll take them in the first week or two. She'll take them to Lowe's or Home Depot and spend a couple hours walking down the electrical aisle. This is a conduit fitting. This is a circuit breaker. These are the different types of conduits. And that's the that's a first step into getting them that site, that real world experience. And right now, in the environment that we're in, this gap that we're talking about, what we have to do is accelerate that experience transfer from the fewer senior engineers we have to the juniors that need it. And a big part of that is that field exposure, that site visit, opportunities to interact with the contractors and see the projects be built and learn, look, man, well, why did I do that? It helps make a better designer, for sure. Now, your question has two parts. The second part, I think, is more challenging. Are they getting enough of it? And I guess it depends on the industry. In my opinion, I think there's some real challenges here to getting juniors that experience. One of the projects move a lot faster now than they ever have. Back when I started, we were doing, it took us forever to put a set of drawings together, and specs and calculations took a long time. But projects move faster today. Teams are leaner. We used to have a lot of people doing work. We used to do these calculations where we would have to overlay breaker trip curves on to figure out the circuit breaker settings. And now the software can do it in seconds. And so teams are leaner. Remote work is more common. You and I are talking here, but we're hundreds of miles apart. And the same thing is happening in the field. And so there's a lot of things that stand in the way of getting these engineers out there on the actual projects that they're working on. So I do think that I do think that th this is one of the challenges that we need to work on. That site experience is important. It's not the answer. It's not this, silver bullet, but it is important for the development of these engineers.
Definitely, definitely. And you touched a little bit on the electrical side of things, so I'm going to follow that train of thought. How are trends such as electrification or EV charging, maybe renewable energy or energy storage, how is that increasing the demand for electrical engineering expertise?
Oh, for sure. It's not making our problem any better, Amara. The world is just becoming more complex and more technologically advanced. The pace of that change is increasing as well. And so the demand for engineering expertise of all kinds, but particularly electrical, is growing because we're becoming more and more dependent on electricity than ever. I mean, if you look at the trends in industries, we're electrifying transportation, right? There's renewable generation going everywhere. There's battery storage, new this kind of more of a newer trend that's augmenting this renewable energy generation. We're modernizing infrastructure. I mean, all of that stuff requires electricity, and it requires electrical engineers to plan and design and construct it. And my goodness, it's increasing the demand considerably. The electrification is happening. EVs, data centers, even water infrastructure. I mean, every major industry is electrifying, and electrical engineers are just they're in the center of solving those problems. It's not helping. It's not helping the problem, but it's a good problem to have.
Definitely a good problem. So you've got a lot of experience, a lot of background here. What parts of electrical design still require that really deep experience? I mean, we've talked about software, we've talked about digital tools. What still requires that deep experience?
That is the crux of the issue, and the answer is it's the parts of engineering that depend on judgment, that depend on real world experience, and like you said, the software can answer the questions faster than we can, but that experience is knowing what questions to ask it, right? And so there's a couple of areas, or the early project decisions, right? Like getting the project off on the right track. And for us, it would be like voltage selection or how the distribution architecture or whatever. Those decisions require experience, having done it before. Designing and constructability and maintainability, that's real world engineering, and a model or a AI agent isn't going to be able to help us there. Unusual conditions. There's unfortunately not every project is simple, and so maybe none of them are simple. But anyway, there's unusual conditions out there that require that judgment, and then risk, understanding risk, and then coming up with creative solutions. So, a simple model and an output a lot of times isn't going to do the trick. We need that creativity. So technology gives us answers, but experience tells us what matters. There's a great story, and it's true, or it's mostly true, about Henry Ford. Back in the 20s, at his factory, the factory shut down because one of the big generators stopped working, and they messed with it for a little while and couldn't figure it out. So they called in one of the sharpest electrical engineers at the time. This guy's name is Steinmetz, electrical engineer. And they said, "Come take a look at this thing." So he showed up at the factory, looked at the generator, and after about half an hour, he climbed up on the generator and took a piece of chalk, and he made a mark next to an adjustable fitting of some kind on the generator. He said, "Guys, adjust that until it lines up with the chalk mark, and you should be good to go." And sure enough, the generator worked, fired right up. And so a couple of days later, Henry Ford gets an invoice in the mail for $10,000 from this engineer, and his got a lot of money back then. And he says, "What are you? I'm not going to pay that. You were here for 30 minutes." He goes, "Send me a detail, an itemized invoice for your work." And so Steinmetz does. He sends him an invoice with two line items. The first line item says, "Making one chalk mark, $1." And the second line item is, "Knowing where to put the chalk mark, $9,999." And so,
Wow.
yeah. So the value isn't the 30 minutes it took to put the chalk mark on. The value is the 20, 30 years of experience he had that told him where to put it. And so that, I think the value of engineers and this experience isn't how long it takes to solve a problem. It's the expertise required to solve the problem.
Right. And thinking outside the box or understanding what the box even is to be able to solve that problem.
For sure. Definitely. Yes.
Right. So if the engineering industry handles this transition well, what does the future of consulting work look like?
Well, I'm an optimist, Amara. I think we're going to figure this out. We got the smartest and most capable engineering graduates entering the workforce now than we've ever had. We have the best tools and technology that we've ever had. And it's not just me and you trying to solve this problem. There's a whole industry right now whose priority it is to develop, these engineers faster, get the experience down, and help us solve the problem. So we got a lot of good things going for us here. The future is using technology to help us work smarter and faster, to accelerate the delivery, and letting engineers spend more time doing, what they need to be doing to build that experience and expertise, and not the annoying things that get in the way of that, the automated, the routine tasks that we have, and the analysis that used to take a long time. Now it takes less time soon, and it'll take even less time. I think the technology, the future, I think the technology is going to help us. Is help us spend more of our time solving the problems, getting that knowledge transfer from experienced folks to the younger generation. This is the Spencer Perry's humble opinion of what the future of it holds. But it's not fewer engineers; it's more capable engineers. I think technology is going to handle the routine work and let the engineers focus on creativity and innovation and judgment and helping. I think the technology is going to help engineers solve more problems, create more challenges. The profession has always evolved. We started drafting on tables, and then we went to CAD. We started doing these hand calculations that we talked about earlier. Now we're doing, when we have software, now we have an AI area. So, we've always changed. This is just another problem for the industry to solve. And that's what we do. We're engineers. We solve problems.
Right. And I love the optimism. Your crystal ball is definitely one that is working pretty well, I think.
We'll see, won't we?
Yeah, we sure will. We sure will. So you've been doing this for a while. You've got a lot of background, a lot of experience. Is this what you thought you would be doing in life, or did you always anticipate you'd be an engineer?
Oh, Amara, I'm a million miles from where I thought I would be, but it's been so. When I graduated high school, I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to be a mechanic. I said, I want to be a mechanic. So I went to school, I got certified, and I worked for a few years. And after a couple of years, I said, I do not want to be a mechanic. And my dad was a civil engineer. He worked for DOT, and so I went to UCF and started as a civil engineering major. And I got a job with one of my buddies as an electrician. And so I was working as an electrician. And I said, I'm going to drop out. I don't need college. I'm going to drop out of college. I'll become an electrician. And so my dad, who's very wise, caught me and said, hey, look, don't just get your civil engineering degree. And then you can be the world's only electrician who has a civil engineering degree, but get the degree. So I did. I stuck with it. And during my college, of course, I switched from civil to electrical engineering. And then started as a summer intern at the company that I still work for 27 years later. And that's how I'm sitting here talking to you. It's been a windy road, but I got a lot of experience during that time. And that's what we're talking about, right? Is that experience and helped me become who I am today.
Love it. And that adds to the creativity and it adds to, like you said, thinking a little bit differently on things. So cool. Very cool.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, this career development conversation is very welcome. Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you. It's been fun talking about this. This is a definite problem that, like I said, you and I aren't going to solve it. It's an industry problem, and it needs to be talked about and thought about and done something about.
Exactly. This is where we need to wrap things up. Workforce development is nebulous for many engineers. So, for more information on it and other similar engineering topics, visit Consulting Specifying Engineer at csemag.com. And don't forget to check in regularly for new podcast episodes. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back again soon. Bye bye.